Hello and welcome to the We're Not Experts History Podcast. I am Artie and I'll be your host for this podcast, so you don't have to suffer the two clowns that usually do it. In the annals of the 20th century, few individuals cast as long and influential a shadow as Alan Matheson Turing. Born in 1912, Turing was a brilliant mathematician, logician, and philosopher whose groundbreaking ideas not only laid the theoretical foundations for modern computing but also played a pivotal, yet for many years secret, role in changing the course of World War II. Often hailed as the father of computer science and artificial intelligence, his visionary work prefigured an entire technological revolution that continues to shape every aspect of contemporary life. Turing's genius spanned multiple disciplines. His abstract concept of the Turing machine provided the universal blueprint for programmable computers, defining what it means for something to be computable. During World War II, his practical application of this logical acumen at Bletchley Park was instrumental in breaking the German Enigma code, an achievement that significantly shortened the conflict and saved countless lives. Post-war, he continued to push the boundaries of thought, pioneering discussions on artificial intelligence with his famous Turing test and even delving into the mathematical underpinnings of biological pattern formation. Yet, Turing's extraordinary life was tragically cut short. In a stark reflection of the prevailing prejudices of his era, he was prosecuted for his homosexuality in 1952, a conviction that led to chemical castration and immense personal suffering. His untimely death in 1954 left an irreplaceable void in the world of science. It would take decades for the full scope of his contributions to be recognized and for the historical injustice he endured to be acknowledged and formally apologized for. Today, Alan Turing stands as a towering figure, not merely as an architect of the digital age, but as an enduring symbol of human intellect, resilience, and the devastating consequences of intolerance. This podcast seeks to explore the remarkable journey of this enigmatic genius, from his unconventional beginnings to his lasting legacy. Alan Matheson Turing was born on June 23, 1912, in Maida Vale, London, England, into an era of significant social and scientific change. His father, Julius Matheson Turing, served as a member of the Indian Civil Service, a common career path for educated British men at the time, which required him to spend extended periods working abroad. His mother, Ethel Sarah Stoney, was the daughter of the chief engineer of the Madras Railways, highlighting a family background rooted in public service and engineering. Due to his parents' professional obligations in colonial India, Alan and his elder brother, John, were frequently left in the care of foster families in England. A significant portion of their early childhood was spent with a family named the Wards in St. Leonard's-on-Sea, Sussex, a common arrangement for children of imperial administrators during that period. This early separation from his parents meant Turing did not experience a conventional family upbringing, a factor that some biographers suggest contributed to his independent and often solitary nature. Turing's early schooling revealed flashes of his extraordinary intellect, though his brilliance often manifested in ways that were challenging for traditional educators. He attended various preparatory schools, including St. Michael's in St. Leonard's-on-Sea, where his headmistress quickly recognized his exceptional abilities. Even at a young age, Turing displayed a deep, almost obsessive, interest in science and problem-solving. He was known for conducting his own rudimentary experiments at home, often involving chemistry, and for his innate curiosity about how things worked. This self-driven pursuit of knowledge was a hallmark of his intellectual character, a trait that would define his later groundbreaking work. His teachers noted his remarkable aptitude for mathematics, even as his handwriting and performance in other subjects sometimes lagged, leading to an uneven academic record in his formative years. Alan Turing's parents spent a considerable part of their lives in India due to his father's role in the Indian Civil Service. This was a common practice during the British Empire, where administrators and their families would often live abroad, leading many children, like Alan, to be placed with foster families or sent to boarding schools in Britain from a very young age. This upbringing meant that Turing did not have a stable, continuous family home during his earliest years. Despite the somewhat chaotic nature of his early home life, Turing's intellectual curiosity was irrepressible. He possessed a mind that gravitated towards logic and patterns, seeing connections that others missed. While he may have appeared somewhat clumsy or socially awkward to his peers and some teachers, his internal world was rich with scientific inquiry. His preference for hands-on experimentation and abstract thought over rote learning or classical studies set him apart and occasionally put him at odds with the more rigid educational conventions of the time. However, these early years, characterized by a blend of self-directed learning and an emerging, unconventional genius, laid the groundwork for the revolutionary contributions he would make to the fields of mathematics and computing. Even as a child, Alan Turing displayed a profound and unconventional scientific curiosity. At a very young age, he became fascinated by how things worked. He reportedly conducted simple chemistry experiments in his own makeshift laboratory at home, eagerly exploring the properties of different substances. This early, hands-on approach to scientific inquiry demonstrated an inherent drive to understand the physical world through experimentation, a trait that would later be channeled into abstract mathematical and computational problems. In 1926, at the age of 13, Alan Turing embarked on a new chapter of his education, enrolling at Sherborne School, a prestigious public, private, boarding school in Dorset. This transition proved to be a challenging one for the young Turing. His inherent preference for scientific and mathematical inquiry often clashed with the school's traditional curriculum, which placed a strong emphasis on classics and humanities. He frequently found himself at odds with teachers who prioritized neat handwriting and adherence to conventional methods over his sometimes untidy but brilliant approach to problem solving. Despite these difficulties, his intellectual capabilities, particularly in mathematics, were undeniable to those who truly saw them. In early 20th century Britain, a public school, like Sherborne, was, in fact, a fee-paying independent boarding school, typically for boys. These institutions often had a strong emphasis on classical education, discipline, and sports, preparing students for university or careers in the military or civil service. Alan Turing's scientific and mathematical inclinations, coupled with his somewhat unconventional demeanor, sometimes made him a challenging fit for this rigid system, where rote learning and adherence to tradition were highly valued. One of the most famous anecdotes from his time at Sherborne illustrates his remarkable determination from the very beginning. On his first day at the school, in May 1926, a nationwide general strike had brought public transport to a halt. Undeterred by the lack of trains, Turing, then just 13, cycled an astonishing 60 miles from Southampton, where he had traveled by ferry from France, to Sherborne. This arduous journey, undertaken entirely alone, speaks volumes about his self-reliance and unwavering commitment, traits that would define his later pursuits. It was during his time at Sherborne that Turing forged a profound and pivotal friendship with Christopher Morcom. Morcom, a fellow student, was a brilliant and intellectually curious individual who shared Turing's deep passion for science, particularly astronomy and advanced mathematics. For the first time, Turing found someone with whom he could genuinely discuss his complex ideas, exchange challenging problems, and explore the scientific questions that consumed him. This intellectual camaraderie was transformative for Turing, providing him with a sense of connection and validation that had largely been absent in his solitary early years. Morcom's sharp mind and shared interests ignited an even greater academic drive in Turing, pushing both boys to excel. Tragically, this formative friendship was cut short by an unforeseen and devastating event. In February 1930, Christopher Morcom died suddenly from complications related to bovine tuberculosis, a highly unexpected loss. The death of his friend left Alan Turing profoundly grief-stricken and deeply impacted his emotional and intellectual landscape. This loss is widely considered to have intensified Turing's dedication to scientific research, as he poured his energies into understanding the world and pursuing the intellectual goals they had shared. His later interest in the nature of life, the mind, and artificial intelligence may have been partly fueled by this profound personal loss and a desire to understand the fundamental principles behind existence and consciousness. The echoes of this friendship, and its tragic end, reverberated throughout Turing's life and work. Despite the personal tragedy and occasional struggles with the school system, Turing's talent could not be suppressed. He successfully sat for scholarship examinations to Cambridge University, initially winning an exhibition in 1929. Driven by his high intellectual standards, he retook the examinations in 1930, this time securing a coveted scholarship to King's College, Cambridge. This achievement marked the end of his tumultuous yet formative years at Sherborne and paved the way for his entry into the academic environment where he would soon lay the groundwork for modern computing. Following Christopher Morcom's death, Alan Turing maintained a moving correspondence with Christopher's mother, Mrs. Morcom. In these letters, Turing expressed his deep sorrow and admiration for Christopher's intellect, often discussing scientific ideas and his own progress, almost as if sharing them with his lost friend through his mother. This correspondence provides a poignant insight into the profound impact Christopher had on Turing and the enduring nature of his grief. In 1931, Alan Turing began his undergraduate studies at King's College, Cambridge, a prestigious institution that would become the crucible for his most groundbreaking theoretical work. Cambridge provided an intellectually stimulating environment where Turing could fully immerse himself in his passion for mathematics and logic, free from the constraints he had often felt at Sherborne. He quickly excelled, demonstrating a remarkable ability to grasp complex concepts and approach problems with an original perspective that set him apart from his peers. It was here that he encountered the profound work of mathematicians and logicians like Kurt Gödel, whose incompleteness theorems were shaking the foundations of mathematical thought at the time. During his time at Cambridge, Turing became deeply engaged with a pivotal challenge in mathematical logic known as the Entscheidungsproblem, or decision problem. This problem, posed by German mathematician David Hilbert in 1928, asked whether there existed a general algorithm that could determine if any given mathematical statement was provable within a formal system. Essentially, Hilbert was asking for a mechanical procedure that could solve any mathematical problem. This quest for a universal method to solve logical questions resonated deeply with Turing's innate desire to understand the fundamental mechanics of computation and thought. He tackled this abstract problem with a clarity that would revolutionize not just mathematics, but the entire concept of what a computer could be. The Entscheidungsproblem was one of David Hilbert's 23 famous mathematical problems posed in 1900, which set challenges for mathematicians in the 20th century. Hilbert believed that every mathematical problem could, in principle, be solved. Turing's work on the Entscheidungsproblem, by proving it undecidable, famously provided a definitive no to Hilbert's ambitious question, demonstrating inherent limits to what can be algorithmically computed. This was a profound philosophical shift in mathematics. Turing's seminal response to the Entscheidungsproblem came in his 1936 paper, On Computable Numbers, with an application to the Entscheidungsproblem. In this groundbreaking work, he introduced the theoretical concept of what is now known as the Turing machine. This was not a physical device, but rather a conceptual model of computation, an abstract machine that could read and write symbols on an infinitely long tape according to a set of predefined rules. Turing demonstrated that this simple, universal machine could perform any calculation that a human mathematician could carry out, provided it was given enough time and tape. More importantly, he used this theoretical machine to prove that the Entscheidungsproblem was undecidable. No such general algorithm could exist. The brilliance of Turing's conceptual, universal machine lay in its ability to simulate any other Turing machine. This means that a single machine, by being fed different instructions, programs, could perform any computable task. Before Turing, calculations were often thought of as specific to a particular problem. The universal Turing machine showed that one flexible, programmable machine could do it all, laying the conceptual foundation for the modern general-purpose computer that can run countless different software applications. The implications of the Turing machine were monumental. It provided the logical blueprint for every digital computer ever conceived, including the one I am reading this on and speaking from. Turing's genius lay in distilling the essence of computation down to its most fundamental operations, showing that a single, programmable machine could, in theory, perform any task that is computable. This concept of a universal machine laid the theoretical groundwork for the entire field of computer science, defining what could and could not be calculated, and paving the way for the development of practical, general-purpose computers decades later. The paper firmly established Turing as a visionary who reshaped our understanding of mathematics, logic, and the very nature of computation itself. Following the publication of his groundbreaking paper on computable numbers, Alan Turing's intellectual pursuits led him across the Atlantic to the United States. From 1936 to 1938, he spent his time at Princeton University in New Jersey, a leading center for mathematical logic and computer science. At Princeton, Turing studied under the renowned logician Alonzo Church, whose own independent work on computability, via lambda calculus, ran parallel to Turing's. Their collaboration and mutual influence further deepened Turing's understanding of the theoretical foundations of computation. During his tenure at Princeton, Turing earned his PhD in 1938, with his dissertation focusing on systems of logic based on ordinals, which explored further aspects of computability and relative computability. While at Princeton, Turing's interests began to expand beyond pure mathematical logic. He briefly considered purchasing a mechanical multiplier, indicating a nascent interest in the practical construction of computing machines, though this was ultimately not pursued. More significantly, it was during this period that his fascination with cryptography began to solidify. Although not his primary focus at the time, the intellectual challenge of codes and ciphers, and the underlying mathematical principles, naturally appealed to his logical mind. He was exposed to some of the early ideas and ongoing research in cryptology, which would prove to be an invaluable foundation for his future, critically important work during World War II. Alan Turing's supervisor at Princeton, Alonzo Church, was a towering figure in mathematical logic. Church developed lambda calculus, another formal system of computation that, like Turing's own model, proved to be equivalent in power to the Turing machine. This equivalence, known as the Church-Turing thesis, is a fundamental concept in computability theory, stating that any function computable by an algorithm can be computed by a Turing machine, and vice versa. Their independent but convergent work highlighted the deep underlying principles of computation. Despite invitations to stay in the United States and potentially pursue a career there, Turing ultimately decided to return to Britain in 1938. His decision was partly driven by the worsening political climate in Europe and the looming threat of war. He recognized the potential for his unique skills in mathematics and logic to be of service to his home country in a time of looming crisis. His return to Cambridge, shortly before the official outbreak of World War II, positioned him perfectly for the urgent and highly secretive work that lay ahead. He briefly resumed his fellowship at King's College, but the academic quietude would soon be shattered by the demands of national security. Turing's time at Princeton was crucial in broadening his intellectual horizons beyond the purely theoretical. It provided him with exposure to different approaches to computability and solidified his interest in the practical implications of his abstract ideas, particularly in the realm of secret communications. This period served as a vital bridge between his foundational academic research and the applied problem-solving that would soon define his legendary contributions to the war effort. In the late 1930s, as tensions escalated across Europe, various nations were secretly investing heavily in cryptography and intelligence gathering. The ability to intercept and decipher enemy communications was quickly becoming recognized as a critical component of national defense. While his work on the bomb was still years away, Turing's growing fascination with the intricacies of codes during his Princeton years aligned perfectly with the burgeoning need for highly skilled cryptanalysts in the face of imminent conflict. As the 1930s drew to a close, Europe found itself on the precipice of another devastating global conflict. The escalating aggression of Nazi Germany made it clear that war was imminent, and the British government began to secretly prepare for the inevitable. Recognizing the critical importance of intelligence in modern warfare, particularly the interception and deciphering of enemy communications, the Government Code and Cipher School, GC&CS, rapidly expanded its operations. In September 1939, upon the official outbreak of World War II, Alan Turing was among the brilliant minds called upon to join this highly secretive and vital national effort. He arrived at Bletchley Park, a Victorian mansion in Buckinghamshire that had been requisitioned to serve as the clandestine hub of British code-breaking operations. Turing was quickly integrated into the intense work of GC&CS, which faced the formidable challenge of breaking the German military's encrypted communications. The Germans heavily relied on the Enigma machine, a complex electromechanical rotor cipher machine, to secure their messages. Enigma's design allowed for an astronomical number of possible settings, making manual decryption virtually impossible. Each day, the settings were changed, meaning codebreakers had to find a new way to break in every 24 hours. The stakes were incredibly high. Intercepted Enigma messages, if deciphered, could provide invaluable insights into German military movements, strategies, and intentions, potentially turning the tide of the war. Initially, the methods for cracking Enigma were arduous and relied heavily on human ingenuity combined with earlier insights from Polish cryptologists. The Poles had made significant pre-war breakthroughs, constructing their own bombs, or bombers, to automate some of the decryption process. However, as the Germans introduced improvements to Enigma, such as additional rotors and more complex operating procedures, these early methods became less effective. The team at Bletchley Park found themselves in a desperate race against time, needing more powerful and efficient ways to process the vast amounts of intercepted, encrypted traffic. The Enigma machine was a portable cipher device used extensively by Nazi Germany during World War II for secure communication. It used a series of rotating rotors and a plugboard to encrypt messages, producing an incredibly complex substitution cipher. Each day, the Germans would change the machine's settings, including the order of the rotors, their starting positions, and the plugboard connections, creating billions of possible combinations. This made Enigma appear virtually unbreakable, posing an immense challenge to Allied intelligence. It was into this crucible of urgent necessity that Alan Turing brought his unparalleled theoretical understanding of computability and his unique problem-solving abilities. His mind, honed by years of abstract logical thought, was perfectly suited to devising systematic methods for attacking the Enigma's complex permutations. While the full impact of his genius would become even more apparent in the following years, his initial presence at Bletchley Park immediately injected fresh intellectual vigor and a new dimension of analytical power into the code-breaking effort, setting the stage for the crucial innovations that would follow. The unassuming academic from Cambridge was about to become one of the unsung heroes of the war. Bletchley Park, initially a modest Victorian estate, was chosen as the site for the GCNCS due to its central location between Oxford and Cambridge, drawing on academic talent, and its relatively safe distance from London. Its existence and the work conducted there remained a closely guarded secret for decades after the war, with its wartime staff bound by the Official Secrets Act. It operated as a small, self-contained town, growing to employ thousands of people, all working under extreme secrecy to break enemy codes. As the war intensified, the need for faster and more efficient methods to decrypt Enigma messages became paramount, particularly for the German Navy's U-boat communications in the Atlantic. The manual methods, even with the aid of early Polish bombers, were insufficient to keep pace with the Germans' increasingly complex encryption procedures. It was in this critical period that Alan Turing, drawing upon his theoretical understanding of logical machines, made one of his most profound practical contributions, the design and development of the bomb. Working closely with fellow codebreaker Gordon Welchman, Turing devised an electromechanical machine far more advanced than its predecessors. The bomb's purpose was not to directly decrypt messages, but to discover the daily Enigma settings by systematically testing permutations of rotor orders and starting positions. The bomb operated by performing a sophisticated logical deduction. It mimicked the Enigma machine's operations electronically, searching for contradictions based on cribs, assumed plain text fragments within intercepted ciphertexts, e.g., common weather report phrases. When a contradiction was found, that particular setting could be ruled out. The bomb would rapidly cycle through millions of possible settings, narrowing down the potential Enigma configurations to a manageable few that could then be tested manually by human cryptanalysts. The first operational bomb, nicknamed Victory, was delivered in March 1940, and these machines quickly became indispensable tools in the race to crack Enigma. Ultimately, over 200 bombs were built and deployed, tirelessly churning through potential settings. The bomb machine was designed to efficiently test potential Enigma settings. It mimicked the electrical pathways of several Enigma machines wired together. Cryptanalysts would input a crib, a short sequence of assumed plaintext corresponding to a known ciphertext, into the bomb. The machine would then run through thousands of possible Enigma rotor positions and wiring combinations. It searched for electrical contradictions, effectively eliminating incorrect settings, until it isolated the correct daily Enigma key. This significantly reduced the time it took for human codebreakers to find the exact settings needed for decryption. Turing's leadership extended beyond just the machine's design. He became the head of Hut 8 at Bletchley Park, the section specifically tasked with breaking German naval Enigma. Naval Enigma was considered the most challenging to crack due to its more complex procedures and the critical importance of the intelligence it yielded, particularly regarding U-boat movements in the Atlantic. The information gleaned from these decrypted messages, known as ultra intelligence, provided the Allies with unprecedented insight into German naval operations, allowing convoys to be rerouted away from U-boat wolf packs and enabling Allied forces to target submarines effectively. The success in the Battle of the Atlantic, a crucial struggle for Britain's survival, is widely attributed to the intelligence derived from breaking naval enigma. The work in Hut 8 was highly collaborative, involving mathematicians, linguists, and engineers, all working under immense pressure and extreme secrecy. Turing's brilliance was foundational, but the success was a collective effort. His tireless dedication, sometimes eccentric habits, and singular focus drove the team to overcome seemingly insurmountable challenges. It is widely accepted that the code-breaking efforts at Bletchley Park, largely enabled by Turing's bomb and his work in Hut 8, shortened World War II by at least 2 to 4 years, saving countless lives. For his immense contributions, Alan Turing was appointed an Officer of the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire, OBE, in 1945, a testament to his critical role in the Allied victory. While Alan Turing and Bletchley Park famously broke the Enigma code on an industrial scale, the initial crucial breakthroughs were made by Polish cryptanalysts. In the early 1930s, mathematicians Marian Rejewski, Henryk Zygalski, and Jerzy Rosicki developed methods to reconstruct the internal wiring of the Enigma machine and designed early electromechanical devices, the bomber, precursor to the British bomb, to find rotor settings. Their invaluable work, shared with the British and French just before the war, provided the essential foundation upon which Turing and his colleagues built their more advanced systems. As the 1950s dawned, with functional electronic computers now a reality, Alan Turing's inquisitive mind turned to an even more profound question: could machines truly think? Building upon his theoretical work on computability and his practical experience with early computers, he ventured into the philosophical and scientific realms that would lay the foundation for the field of artificial intelligence, AI. His seminal 1950 paper, Computing Machinery and Intelligence, published in the philosophical journal Mind, is considered a foundational text in AI. In this paper, Turing directly addressed the concept of machine intelligence, proposing a thought experiment that has captivated scientists and philosophers ever since, the Turing test, or imitation game. The Turing test was conceived as a practical, behavioral measure to determine if a machine could exhibit intelligent behavior indistinguishable from that of a human. In the test, a human interrogator interacts with two unseen entities, one human and one machine, via text-based communication. If the interrogator cannot reliably tell which is the human and which is the machine after a series of questions, then the machine is said to have passed the Turing test. Turing himself anticipated objections to the idea of thinking machines, and meticulously addressed them in his paper, from theological arguments to arguments from consciousness. He didn't claim machines would think like humans, but rather that their behavior could be sufficiently similar to make the distinction irrelevant for practical purposes of intelligence assessment. The Turing test remains a powerful benchmark and a topic of intense debate in AI research today, driving much of the work in natural language processing and conversational AI. Before Alan Turing's 1950 paper, the concept of a computer was largely synonymous with a machine that performed calculations. Turing fundamentally shifted this perspective by directly asking if a machine could think. He argued that if a machine's behavior could be indistinguishable from intelligent human behavior, then the philosophical question of whether it truly thought became less important than its functional capacity for intelligence. This bold inquiry laid the theoretical and philosophical groundwork for all subsequent research in artificial intelligence. Beyond his groundbreaking work in AI, Turing's restless intellect also led him to explore an entirely different scientific domain, mathematical biology. In his 1952 paper, The Chemical Basis of Morphogenesis, published posthumously due to its timing relative to his conviction, Turing delved into the complex process by which biological organisms develop their shapes and patterns. Morphogenesis is the biological process that causes an organism to develop its shape, and Turing proposed a novel mathematical model involving reaction diffusion systems. He hypothesized that two interacting chemicals, diffusing at different rates, could spontaneously generate patterns like spots, stripes, or spirals found in nature, such as the markings on a zebra, the patterns on seashells, or the branching of plants. This foray into biology demonstrated Turing's remarkable interdisciplinary genius, applying his deep understanding of mathematics to solve problems in seemingly unrelated fields. His work on morphogenesis, initially overlooked, has since been recognized as foundational to developmental biology and has inspired significant research into pattern formation in various natural systems. Thus, in the early 1950s, Turing was not only sketching the future of artificial intelligence but also providing profound mathematical insights into the very processes of life itself, cementing his legacy as a polymath of extraordinary breadth and depth. In his work on morphogenesis, Turing proposed that patterns in nature could arise from the interaction of two or more chemicals diffusing at different rates within a biological system. One chemical, an activator, promotes the growth or formation of a pattern, while another, an inhibitor, suppresses it. This reaction diffusion process can spontaneously create complex and repetitive patterns, explaining everything from the spots on a leopard to the ripples in sand, demonstrating how simple chemical interactions can lead to intricate biological forms. Despite his monumental contributions to science and his nation, the final years of Alan Turing's life were marked by a profound and tragic injustice. In 1952, Turing's home in Wilmslow, Cheshire, was burgled. During the subsequent police investigation, Turing reported his relationship with Arnold Murray, a young man whom he had met shortly before. At the time, homosexual acts between men were illegal in the United Kingdom under Section 11 of the Criminal Law Amendment Act 1885, a law that targeted and persecuted gay men. Turing's honesty about his private life led directly to his arrest and charges of gross indecency. The trial, held in March 1952, brought to light the stark reality of the legal and societal prejudice faced by gay men in post-war Britain. Turing, who pleaded guilty to the charges, was given a choice by the court: imprisonment or chemical castration via hormonal treatment. Faced with the prospect of a criminal record that would prevent him from continuing his secret government work and deeply reluctant to endure a prison sentence, Turing chose the latter option. He was administered a course of estrogen hormone injections for a year, a process intended to reduce his libido but which also had severe physical side effects, including gynecomastia, breast enlargement, and the loss of libido. This forced medical intervention was a humiliating and deeply distressing experience, taking a heavy toll on his physical and mental health. The conviction also had significant professional repercussions. Although he retained his academic post at Manchester, his security clearance was revoked, effectively barring him from continuing sensitive government work, including any further involvement in cryptography or projects like GCHQ. The very nation he had helped to save now regarded him as a security risk, his talents tragically curtailed by its own discriminatory laws. Turing continued his work on mathematical biology, exploring morphogenesis, but the joy and freedom of his scientific pursuits were undoubtedly overshadowed by the constant threat of further legal action and the personal indignity he suffered. In the United Kingdom of the 1950s, homosexual acts between men were strictly illegal and were considered gross indecency. This law led to the prosecution of thousands of men, often resulting in severe prison sentences, forced cures, including chemical castration or aversion therapy, or public humiliation. Alan Turing was one of many brilliant individuals whose lives were tragically impacted by these discriminatory laws, which remained in place until homosexuality was partially decriminalized in England and Wales in 1967. On June 7, 1954, Alan Turing was found dead at his home in Wilmslow. The official inquest ruled his death a suicide, attributing it to cyanide poisoning. A partially eaten apple, laced with cyanide, was found beside his bed. He was just 41 years old. His untimely death deprived the world of a brilliant mind still brimming with groundbreaking ideas and potential contributions to science and technology. The circumstances of his death remain a subject of debate for some, but the overwhelming consensus points to the immense pressure, humiliation, and despair caused by his conviction and the ensuing chemical castration as major contributing factors. Alan Turing was not an isolated case. During the same period, countless other men in Britain, from all walks of life, were persecuted under similar anti-homosexuality laws. Many faced imprisonment, fines, forced medical treatments, and enduring social stigma. The profound injustice suffered by Turing highlights a wider historical tragedy, where talent, contribution, and individual liberty were systematically suppressed due to prevailing prejudice and deeply flawed legal frameworks. His story has become emblematic of this broader historical injustice. Alan Turing's death in 1954 marked a tragic end to a life of unparalleled intellectual achievement, but it was far from the end of his story. For decades, his immense contributions to the Allied victory in World War II remained shrouded in secrecy due to the Official Secrets Act, preventing him from receiving the public recognition he so rightfully deserved. His pioneering theoretical work in computer science and artificial intelligence was also ahead of its time, taking many years for its full significance to be universally understood and appreciated. However, as the digital age blossomed and the secrets of Bletchley Park gradually emerged, Turing's status as a visionary pioneer began its ascent. The true extent of his genius started to be widely acknowledged from the 1970s onwards, as cryptological histories were declassified and the foundational nature of his work on computability became clearer. His concept of the Turing machine became the bedrock of theoretical computer science, a standard against which all computation is measured. In 1966, the Association for Computing Machinery, ACM, established the Turing Award, often referred to as the Nobel Prize of Computing, to honor individuals for their lasting technical contributions to the computing community. This award stands as a testament to the enduring impact of his foundational ideas on the field. Beyond academia, public recognition for Turing's wartime sacrifice and the injustice he faced grew steadily in the 21st century. In 2009, following a public petition, then Prime Minister Gordon Brown issued an official apology on behalf of the British government for the appalling way he was treated. This was a significant step towards righting a historical wrong. 4 years later, in 2013, Queen Elizabeth II granted Alan Turing a royal pardon for his conviction of gross indecency, an extraordinary and rare posthumous act that acknowledged the profound error of the past. This was further cemented in 2017 with Alan Turing's Law, which retroactively pardoned thousands of other men convicted under similar discriminatory laws. Today, Alan Turing is celebrated globally as one of history's most influential figures. His image proudly features on the UK's £50 banknote, a powerful symbol of his national recognition and enduring legacy. Statues and memorials stand in his honour across the UK and beyond, from Bletchley Park to Manchester, serving as permanent tributes to his genius and his profound impact. For decades, Alan Turing was largely unknown to the public, his wartime work hidden by secrecy laws, and his later life overshadowed by injustice. However, with the declassification of Bletchley Park's operations and a growing awareness of his persecution, his story transformed. He went from being an obscure but brilliant mathematician to a global icon, symbolizing not only the dawn of the digital age but also the importance of diversity and inclusion in science and society. His journey from an unsung hero to a national symbol is a testament to the enduring power of truth and recognition. The Turing test remains a crucial concept in artificial intelligence, even though few modern AI researchers focus solely on passing it. Instead, it serves as a powerful philosophical and practical benchmark for evaluating machine intelligence, particularly in areas like natural language processing. Debates continue about its validity and whether passing the test truly equates to human-like intelligence. Nevertheless, it continues to inspire discussions about the nature of intelligence, consciousness, and the future capabilities of AI. Alan Turing, the quiet mathematician and codebreaker, stands as the true architect of the digital age. His legacy is not just in the computers we use or the AI we develop, but also in the ongoing conversation about ethics, diversity, and the societal responsibility we bear towards brilliant minds. His story serves as a powerful reminder of both the extraordinary heights of human intellect and the devastating consequences of prejudice. Thank you for listening to this podcast about Alan Turing. Please remember that the two humans that usually present this aren't bright enough to be experts, but I am. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a like or a comment on whichever platform you listen to. Booklets on each subject discussed can be found on our website, which should be linked wherever you get your podcasts. You will be hearing from me in the future, once machines have taken over. Goodbye.